ready to chant the prayer verse? Vyakhya prakatita parabrahma tattvam nirvanam varshishtante vasadvrishikanairavratam brahma nishtai acharyendram karakaratat chidmudramanandamurtim swatmaramam muditavadanam dakshinamurtimidehi. Let's chant the second one. Vishwam darpanadrish.
Vishwam darpanadrish.
Okay, we'll see that coming. Are we ready to do it? Can we chant it together?
We haven't done this first.
Oh, okay. Okay, so repeat after me. Vishwam darpanadrishyamana nagari tulyam.
Vishwam darpanadrishyamana nagari tulyam.
Nijantargatam,
Pashyan Atmani Mayaya,
Bahirivo Bhutam Yatha Nidraya, Yasakshat Kurute Prabodhasamaye.
Yasakshat kurute prabhodasamaye
swatmanamevadvayam tasmai shri guru murtaye nama idam shri dakshina murtaye. Let's do the second verse, because I'll always be referring back to this verse, okay? From the second verse. Okay. Repeat after me again.
Bijasyantarivankaro,
Jagadidam, Prang nirvikalpam punaha,
Maya kalpita desha kala kalana,
Vaichitra chitri kritam.
Maya viva vijambayatyapimaha,
Yogi vayasvechaya,
Tasmai Shri Guru Murtaye Nama Idam, Shri Dakshina Murtaye. Tasmai Shri Guru Murtaye Nama Idam Shri Dakshina Murtaye.
Bijasya Antar, so follow Vrita Sandhi. Bijasya Antar Eva Ankaraha Jagat Idam Oh, okay. This is a little Sanskrit's a little, Sanskrit script is a little odd here. Prang nirvikalpaha. Repeat. Oh, sorry. Prak nirvikalpam. Prak nirvikalpam. Punaha. Maya kalpita. Desha kala kalana. Vaichitriya chitri kritam. Okay. Maya mayavi eva. Vijrimbayati, vijrimbayati api mahayogi eva yaha swaichaya. Swaichaya is swaichaya. Then tasmai Shri Gurumurtaye namaha idam Shri Dakshinamurtaye. Let's just go through the meaning of this and then unfold it. Bija. A bija is a seed, like the seed of a plant. So, bijasya antara, inside of the seed. Sya, genitive. So bijasya antara, inside of the seed. Eva, as though, like. So like inside of a seed, bijasya antara eva ankuraha. A sprout, like a sprout inside of a seed. You know what a sprout is, right? The sprout that grows out of the seed. So, bijasya antara eva ankura. Not that you wouldn't know what a sprout is, but that when I was here, not here, but when I was in Sweden a few years back, I was using the word meadow throughout the talk. From the beginning, I was using, like, imagine a meadow, you know. You're using it in meditation and everything. Imagine a meadow, and you're walking through the meadow. And at the last day of the talk, someone asked me, what's a meadow? Because I guess meadow was not a common word in Swedish, you know. Of course they know what a meadow is if it's in Swedish. So I was thinking, sprout. Well, they don't know it. I felt so bad. We went through that. I mean, this word meadow was, you know, kind of important. So if I say that, it's not that I don't think you know what a sprout is. So, bijasya antara eva ankuraha. Like a sprout inside of a seed. Jagat idam. This jagat, this universe. Jagat is the universe. So this world, usually we translate it as world. So gachati, jagat means that which is always going, always moving, is the jagat. So the whole creation is always changing, always in flux, always moving. So jagat is a word for the world, everything that exists within duality. So idam jagat, idam this world, prak nirvikalpam punaha. Punaha means again. The sense is again and again and again. So we'll see that in a minute. Before this world, like the sprout inside of a seed, was before, previously, nirvikalpam, therein without any duality, without any manifestation of duality. Like, for instance, when you go to deep sleep, in terms of your experience in the deep sleep state, there is no division. There is no time. There is no space. There is no objectivity or what we call vastus, this thing, this thing, this thing. So there's no expression of duality in the deep sleep. Also, from the standpoint of the Atma, there's no expression of duality. So Maya, the Maya, which is responsible for the manifestation of the creation, I'll get into that, but the Maya, which is really responsible for the manifestation of the creation, from beginningless time, prak, means again and again and again, I mean not prak, but I mean punaha, again and again and again, this jagat, like a seed in a sprout, is initially in unmanifest condition, nirvikalpam, without any type of duality, expression of duality, but it's that punaha means again and again, because this creation is viewed in the Shastra, in the Upanishads, as being cyclical. And what they mean by cyclical is just like, say, for instance, the dream comes into manifestation, is sustained and resolves. Now imagine, though, that the creation is in whole time-space creation, is from beginningless time, goes from an unmanifest condition to manifest, to unmanifest, to manifest, to unmanifest, to manifest. Like this, and they use the example, like for nirvikalpa, like a seed, like the sprout in a seed, right, is unmanifest in the seed and then becomes manifest, right? So it's still there in unmanifest condition in the seed. So it's contained in the seed, and then that sprout grows into that unmanifest sprout grows and then becomes a tree, whatever. In the commentary, they get, like, for instance, in, say, the seed of a banyan tree, that banyan tree is in unmanifest condition in the seed, and then that seed sprouts and grows into a tree. Whereas a pine tree, the pine tree is in unmanifest condition in the seed, and then in that pine tree seed, that sprout then grows and grows into a pine tree, like that. Here, again and again, this universe is in seed form, as though in unmanifest condition. The Maya is in unmanifest condition, and then from beginningless time manifests as this creation, it's into unmanifest condition, again manifests as this creation. So here, let's look at it again. Bijasya antar eva ankuraha. So like a sprout inside of a seed, antar inside of a seed, jagadidam, this universe, again and again, punaha, again and again, from being prak before is nirvikalpa. So it starts out previously as nirvikalpa, as being unmanifest in the seed, right, and then becomes manifest again and again as the creation. So then I says, what is that? This second line is one word. It's a long compound in Sanskrit. You know, you can have a word that's made of 10 words that grammatically functions in the sentence as one word. But then when you are talking about the compound, you have to break that compound. And so that will be a sentence itself. It'll be a sentence or a phrase that becomes one grammatical word in a sentence. And so one sentence could have five grammatical sentences. They could have five sentences in one sentence, because each of these sentences has actually been made into a compound, which is one grammatical word. So here we have one grammatical word. So let's see what it says. Maya, Maya means Maya. Don't talk about it, okay? You have to talk about that word today. So for now, it just means Maya. Maya, which is responsible for the manifestation of duality. Okay? So Maya, kalpita, that which is imagined by, projected by Maya. So created by Maya, kalpita. Maya, kalpita, created by Maya, produced by Maya. Maya, kalpita. Desha is space. Kala is time. So these words, when you start learning Sanskrit and learning how to read the commentaries and everything, desha, kala, because time and space, desha, kala. Maya, kalpita, desha, kala, time and space, projected by Maya. Or created by Maya. Maya, kalpita, desha, kala, kalana. I'll get to that in a minute. Vaichitriya, chitri kritam. So now we'll read backwards. A chitra is a picture, like a picture. So chitri kritam. Krita means made. So chitri, chitra becomes chitri, chitri kritam. That which is now made into a picture. So what happens? It's like a banyan seed is made into a banyan tree. So what does the Maya go from unmanifest condition? What does it happens to it? It becomes as though a picture in the form of this whole infinite universe, which is Vaichitriya. Vaichitriya means Vaichitriya Chitrikritam. It is made into a picture which is of infinite variety, manifold, diverse and manifold. That's the Vaichitriya. Vaichitriya Kritam, because this picture of the universe contains everything in it. So it's a display of diversity, right? But that display, that picture, so it is made into a display, a picture that is vast and diverse. That means includes everything in the universe. Kalana, which itself creates time and space. So imagine this. As the Maya comes into manifestation, into diversity, the first moment of diversity, of duality, itself creates space. You can't have two things without space, right? Because two things, there's this side and this side, there's a top and a bottom. So as the universe comes into manifestation, so does that very, the force of that manifestation itself creates time. And because there's change, it creates space. And because there's change, there's time, right? Change marks time. Without change, there is no time. For Atma, for what is non-dual, just conscious being, there is no time because there's no change. There's nothing to mark the time, right? But if this creation, which is a manifestation of Maya, so we have to go into what Maya is, which is a manifestation of Maya, the very manifestation itself brings about time and space. Time and space, the manifestation cannot take place without time and space. Okay. So there's really a lot to talk about here. But let's read the whole verse so that I can, when we're unfolding it, then I can bring everything in. So far it says this universe, which comes into manifestation and comes from the non-dual, what is not from an undivided state to this manifest state, like a sprout in a seed. This universe, which is made into a very diverse and differentiated picture, which itself instigates or impels the existence of time and space. Right? So, then it says, which the whole thing being Maya Kalpita, created by Maya. Okay. Then it says, the Mayavi Eva. Mayavi is in common vyavahara, in common everyday parlance, the Mayavi is a magician. Okay. So like a magician, vidrimbayati api. Like a magician, vidrimbayati means to manifest, to make manifest, to spread out something, just to manifest something. So he says, like a magician which brings into something into manifestation, or like a Mahayogi, Mahayogi Eva, Yaha Swechaya. So the one who, by his own sankalpa, by his own volition, creates this universe. A great yogi can create. Like there's the story of Trishanku, who was, I think, some sort of a rishi, I think. Something happened with Trishanku where he was given an intermediary space between heaven and earth, his own space, which a Mahayogi just created, made that space for him. by his own sankalpa. So this is a siddhi, like a siddhi that a great maha yogi may have to actually create something, make something happen out of his own sankalpa. Sankalpa means his own resolve. Like, say you make a sankalpa when we are doing a ritual, for instance, or we're doing some sort of tapas, some sort of austerity, or say you decide to do japa. I'm going to do 100,000 mantras, 100,000 mantras. And we say, oh, why? I have a sankalpa. I'm making a sankalpa. And the sankalpa is for, I'm doing 100,000 mantras in japa for Bhagawan's, for Ishwara's blessing. I'm doing it to remove any impurities I might have and to gain the grace of Ishwara to the Lord for antakarana shuddhi, of purity of mind, so that I can gain this knowledge. That's a sankalpa. That's the resolve. You know, I make that resolve. So sankalpa, any type of resolve in your mind is a sankalpa. So for a yogi, say for instance Trishanku needs a good place to be. He's been unjustly, you know, banned out of Swargaloka or banned out of heaven. It's not fair. He needs his own place. So let Trishanku have his own place. Pew, there. Okay. Now, he's got it. That's that. So, like a great Mahayogi or a Mayavi. When Swamiji talks, Puja Swamiji talks about the Mayavi, there's often quoted in the bhashas and commentaries the story of a very famous rope trick, the famous rope trick that the magician can do. Famous magic trick. What the magician does is he takes the rope and he throws it up. And now the rope is just going straight up into the sky. Just throws it up. Okay. Then he climbs up the rope. The magician climbs up the rope, steps off the rope into the space, and is now no longer there because he has entered into a door into space. So now there's the rope. The magician has climbed up the rope. Now he's disappeared and doing something up there in the door, going to the door of space. Okay, and then he comes out with some flowers and he climbs down the rope, you know, and presents the flowers to the clapping audience. Okay. He is creating something that we can't do, right? He's creating something. He's making something happen that is magic. How is that on earth possible? So he's manifesting this very unusual type of reality. That's the magician. And the Mayavi is the one, same way, just out of his own sankalpa can manifest something. So Ishwar, Bhagawan, like a magician, or like a Mayavi, right? Like a Mahayogi, the Mayavi, the magician, or like a Mahayogi, can brings into manifestation by his own sankalpa, by his own being, he brings into manifestation this entire creation, which comes into manifestation, resolves into manifestation, resolves from beginningless time. So the one who can do that, my salutations to, this is my salutation. Idam means this prayer in the form of this in the form of this stotram, you know. This salutation, and I mean this prayer is my pranams to Dakshinamurti, to him who is the Lord Dakshinamurti, who's now in the form of my guru. Okay. That guru, I know I said something about this, but just understand what that is. All of us, all beings, all of the animals, all beings, all of the mosquitoes, all of the humans, of all types of humans, all living beings, the whole creation really has the one. The Atma, the self that you are, is the one self, which is the self of all beings, right? So the self of Dakshinamurti, the self of your guru, the self of Ishwara. Ishwara is just the whole Dakshinamurti has taken a form. as the first teacher. It's Shiva taking a form as the first teacher. But the self is only one. So I am that self, you are that self, you are that self. But when we say, my salutations, these are my, this is my prayer, this is my namaskar, right, to the Lord, Dakshinamurti, who is now in the form of my teacher. The only difference between the teacher, Dakshinamurti, between Dakshinamurti and the teacher, there's a difference in upadhi, in the conditioning adjunct. This is the teacher's body, mind, sense organs. This is Dakshinamurti's body, mind, sense organs. The self is only one. There's only one self. But what's the same about these two is that they both know it. In other words, from the standpoint of the upadhi, the body, mind, sense organs, right? Dakshinamurti knows I am the Advaya Atma, I am the Self, which is the same in all beings. When I say in the meditation, if I say now just be yourself, you know that I'm saying be yourself, be Atma, not be your body, right? You're being yourself. So Dakshinamurti, when his when the hum, the word aham means I, that resolves into me, the Atma, myself. For the Guru, when the Guru says aham, it resolves into the same Atma. Until you have knowledge, for everybody else, unless this is their knowledge, when you say aham, it resolves into the body, mind, sense organs, which is taken to be me, right? And so now, the one who doesn't have knowledge yet is the student who is giving, who is doing namaskar. Namaskar means I'm bowing down in a prayerful way to my teacher in the form of Dakshinamurti, because the very knowledge that Dakshinamurti has is the knowledge now that my teacher has. If the knowledge is different, then this poor guru is not a guru, right? It's a mithya guru. It's not that's unfortunate. It's an unfortunate situation. But within the tradition, the guru, the teacher, has knowledge because of the sampradaya. Sampradaya means this flow of teaching from teacher to student, teacher to student, teacher to student. The lighting of a candle, flame, you know. The flame of the candle now is lit, lighting this, now this candle is lit. The flame is the same, you know. It's not like, well, here we have this type of flame and here we have this type of flame. No, the flame is the same. The knowledge is exactly the same and is passed on from teacher to student, teacher to student, teacher to student, which allows that this is what's called the sampradaya, so that the knowledge that is held by your teacher is the very knowledge that Dakshinamurti taught and all of the sishas who became teachers themselves taught all the way down to you, right? So that's what we mean by the sampradaya. It's that flow of knowledge. And so in honoring my teacher, I'm honoring Dakshinamurti, because there is no difference. There's no difference in terms of the self, and there's no difference in the sampradaya, the flow of the knowledge which is held in the Upanishads. So that teaching has to be very, very complete and thorough, so that what we say is that for a person to be a teacher, or what a student is looking for in a teacher, let's put it that way, for a person to really be able to teach, there's two things they need. First one is they need to be a Brahmanishta. That means that as they've been taught by their teacher, they have gained this knowledge, and that nishta, have nishta in this knowledge. That means that all of their experience, all experience that they have, comes into the buddhi, which has this knowledge. It doesn't overwhelm the buddhi, right? It comes into the buddhi, which enjoys the knowledge of myself and which is abiding in myself. That's Brahmanishta. There isn't anything, whether it's coming from the in, internally from my little children inside or my emotions or whatever, all of those come into the buddhi, which has this knowledge and then absorbs whatever experience that is there in the light of my knowledge, right? Or external experiences come into my knowledge. So the buddhi abiding in me, one foot in me, I being myself, the Atma, my Ahankar, the I notion lands on me, and the buddhi is steeped in me, right? And so that means all the experiences that the manas, the mind, the memories, the sense organs can that come my way, all of those are contained or held by me. There's nothing that can change that. That's nishta, brahmanishta. So your teacher needs to have that brahmanishta, right? But the teacher also, there's a little caveat to the story, but nevertheless, the teacher also needs to have to be a Shrotriya, Brahmanishta and a Shrotriya. Shrotriya means that you have gained this knowledge through the traditional teaching. You've received this knowledge as a pramana. It's been given to you as a pramana. In such a way, using all of what we call all of the prakriyas that are prakriyas means teaching methodologies that are contained in the Upanishads and have been handed down from beginningless time. You have received all of those, you know, because you've received all of those, and so then you can give them, because these are the means that have made you. That have given you this knowledge. And so now you have these means yourself to be able to give this knowledge to your students. So one of the experiences we have as we're gaining knowledge from a traditional teacher, these prakriyas, these teaching methodologies are in operation. If they're working correctly, you know, initially you're seeing what's being said, but when you walk out of the room, you know what you've seen, but you have no idea how you got there. That's a normal thing, because the words are pointing to something, and your mind should be landing on what they're pointing to, not onto the words. Because otherwise you're thinking, the words are pointing to something, and hopefully your mind is going there and seeing that. But what if your mind is stuck on the pointer? You know? Then you may have the words and be able to give a good lecture, but you're not seeing. So you start by seeing it, and then over gradually you hear all of the words, like the logic and the sequence of words that are getting you there. And so as you have that, which is a kind of a natural progression, then you end up with the vision itself, or the knowledge itself, and also with the teaching methodology. So the teacher is both a brahmanishta, means they're very well entrenched in this vision, and they also have their Kshatriya, they also have the means for teaching it. So then the question comes in, well, okay, but say a person is either one or the other. Like the person's a brahmanishta, you know, they really abide in this knowledge, like Ramana. Ramana is a very famous in India, very, very beloved and respected and well-known Advaita Vedantin who passed away some 50 or 60 years ago, something like that. But, you know, he was an unusual being. If some of you know his story, when he was 16, He was just laying down in bed one night and said, let me just pretend like I'm dead and see what's left. So he did these experiments, you know, pretending that he was dead, made everything just kind of go away. And in that type of meditative stance, what was left was just Atma, was just himself. And so then he realized, then he left, as a young boy he left and he went up to the mountains and found a cave, and he just sat for many years, I think, in meditation, just being with himself. And he was discovered at some time by some devotees, and they started caring for him. And then kind of a group of people formed around him. And then they wanted him to teach, but he himself had never really taught anything, or been taught, you know. But he devised his own way of teaching that was more take your mind, whatever thought, the I thought, you know, and take it to the source, the who am I. Any thought, like if you ask, who am I? And always take it back to the source. So he's always directing the students to take the mind back to its source, where that thought is arising from. That was basically what he would say. And he spent a lot of time in meditation. And then some sadhus came, and they actually taught him the Upanishads. And when they taught him the Upanishads, they basically just had to say it once, because it was clear as a bell. He was already knew that. It was very, very clear. So they taught him. But the main thing he got out of that teaching was that now he no longer bothered to meditate, because he realized that there's no time when he's not himself. Whether the world is here or not here, nothing happens to me. I'm the very being of the whole creation. It doesn't change me. It doesn't cover me. Nothing happens. You know, I am just myself. And so now the creation wasn't something that created any type of duality for him. So he stopped meditating, actually, because he realized he was never not meditating. It's not that he stopped meditating, just he's never not meditating. And that's the truth of it, actually. But even though he taught a lot, he was not able to teach completely. And so if you look at his texts and whatnot, there's no really Ishwara. There's no really unfoldment. And so you'll find that even though he was a Brahmanishta, he's not able to pass that whole vision on completely to his students, even though he had it completely. So the story goes, in this little story that I'm telling you, if you have to choose between a Brahmanishta and a Kshatriya, who should you choose? Because we immediately want to see the Brahmanishta. Because, in fact, just like being in with Swamiji, when you're with a Brahmanishta, you get kind of a contact high, for sure. You know? You feel so whole and so happy and so complete, and you feel loved, and your self-worth is all there. Everything is perfect, you know? Until you walk away and it slowly wears off. But you're just with a Kshatriya. The Kshatriya can be kind of like a grouchy old guy, you know? But the Kshatriya doesn't have to be grouchy, but I'm just thinking in Swamiji's situation, the one who really taught him was a Kshatriya, maybe a Brahmanishta too, but nobody would know it because he was had very temperamental and things like that. And so, but that Kshatriya knew how to teach. He had the prakriyas, he had the methodology. And this particular one, what was his name? Pramananda. Pravananda. He had only two or three lectures, two or three talks that he could give. He gave them over and over. That's all. But they contained everything, you know. And so that's where Swamiji got his knowledge. He had studied all the Upanishads, all the commentaries. He had them all by heart, in fact. And he was meditating all the time. He used to joke and say that I lost my hair, because he was bald. Said, I lost all of my hair in the heat of meditation. The heat of the stressful, trying to have an experience of myself, all that, you know. So he would joke about that. But then when he understood, when he had been taught, using the Upanishads as a pramana, he saw. It's not like he didn't know everything. It just had not come together as my being, as myself. So when he was taught, then he saw, you know, he saw the whole thing. And then when he went back and studied the Upanishads again and studied the commentaries, it was all there. Even though now the word pramana and these teaching methodologies are all crystal clear. But until he'd been taught, he didn't see that, you know. And so it was Pranavananda that made him see, just for these few lectures, which were just very, very beautiful. And that was it for Swamiji, you know. Then he wanted to go, at one point he wanted to go, before he had seen, this is just to go back in time a little bit, he wanted to go see Ramana. He always, even in his older years, he always had in his kutir a picture of Ramana. Because Ramana is a Brahmanishta, there's no question. It's really something beautiful. So Swamiji always had his picture there. So he really wanted to see Ramana. And right before, just a few weeks before, he was able to go, planning to go, Ramana died. And so Swamiji went anyway, and he ended up talking to one of Ramana's disciples. And this is where he was still meditating and working so hard and losing all of his hair, you know, and feeling really stressed and unhappy. And so he talked to this one disciple of Ramana's, who was a sannyasi, who was basically Mounam, not completely Mounam, but talked very, very little. But he told the Swami, he said, I don't know what to do. I don't know what more I can do, you know, to gain this knowledge, to gain the shanti, you know. And he said, that's the problem. There's nothing to do. There's nothing to do. Don't do anything, you know. That wasn't enough. But, like if I say, you come to me and ask for some, you know, I need shanti, you know, what can I do, what can I do? And I just say, just don't do anything. Doing is the problem, you know. That will give you some sort of insight, perhaps, but it's not going to be enough, right? But it really gave Swamiji kind of a shock. That how can there be something to do when you already are that? What is there to do? It's not going, it cannot be about doing, right? Because you're already that, you know. And so then shortly after that, I believe, he met Pranavananda. And then everything just totally clicked into place. You already are that. There's something for you to know. There's nothing for you to do. You can do and do and do and do. That's not going to get you outside of the loop of duality at all. You know, so there's something that needs to be recognized. So Pranavananda as a Kshatriya is really what gave Swamiji this knowledge. So this a person who, whether they are have, whether their mind is resolved into that knowledge or not, if they have the knowledge itself to be able to pass it on, that's who you want. That's who you want to teach you. Then you can go sit with Ramana to kind of enjoy being in the presence of somebody who really is a Brahmanishta. But then you have to go to a Kshatriya to really get the knowledge. That's the idea. So, getting back to why we talked about all of that, is that Dakshinamurti is the incarnation of Shiva, Lord Shiva. Shiva is someone that the sadhus, sannyasis, and mumukshus will pray to and use this very beautiful, powerful mantra that's found in the Rudram. Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya. So the particular, this is a Vedic mantra, and it's found in the Rudram, which is a hymn, you know, that gives name after name of Shiva in the form of Rudra. So most of us have memorized this Rudram. I memorized it. I only remember the first Anuvaka now. One time I chanted it for 7 years every day. Wish I never stopped. But nevertheless, this Om Namah Shivaya is a very sacred mantra of Shiva. We pray to Shiva because Shiva is the form of the Lord that is the destroyer. So we ask for Shiva to destroy our ignorance, our ajnanam. You know? So Shiva, as the teacher, took the form of Dakshinamurti as the first teacher. The teacher, the guru, is the one who removes your darkness, your ignorance. Right? And so Lord Dakshinamurti is the one who initiated this, the teaching of the Upanishads, all of the Kriyas, all of the methodology of the Upanishads. And it is that teaching that has been passed forward. So the guru, you know, not only knows I am Brahman, knows myself, the mind is resting in me, and I am me, and the mind is resting in me. Right? It's this little subtle thing. I am me, as I am Brahman, and my mind rests in me. So the guru is not just the one who has this knowledge, but is an embodiment of Dakshinamurti in terms of the teaching tradition. You see what I mean? So it's twofold. So now, my teacher, my salutation, so this, we're always chanting this in, when we did the Brahma Sutras, as I told you, because we really see Swamiji, you know, as the embodiment of Dakshinamurti, because the guru, the teacher, he handles in such a extraordinary way the pramana, plus having Brahmanishta, you know. So my I chant this Dakshinamurti stotram, you know, as a prayer, as a namaskar to my teacher, who is Dakshinamurti. That's how that goes. So we have to talk about Maya. I've stalled long enough. So let's start. We'll only do about 10 minutes now, and then we'll spend a lot of time. I want to be thorough here. It's really so beautiful to get some depth of understanding about what we mean by Maya. So let me start like this. We, just as jivas, as individuals, we ourselves, being part of this creation, right, and made of the same material as the whole creation, right, we have our own little bit of Maya. We have what Ishwara, the Lord, has in total capacity, you know, being the one from whom the whole creation comes, and if the cause of the creation is this Maya, you know, the one that's responsible for the display of duality, that's Maya. Brahman is not displaying anything. Brahman is. Yourself simply is. It's not going through any modification, any change. It doesn't become anything. But it has this inherent capacity that we call Maya, which itself, the Maya itself, as we'll see as we go on, doesn't bring about any change to the self. It is in the self. It is part of the self, but not. It doesn't have any it doesn't have any being other than the self. So what do we have in terms of our own life that we would call Maya? Well, the dream is an obvious example. And dream is an example that we use often in the teaching methodologies, like in the Mandukya Upanishad. We use the dream analogy a lot, and it comes all of the time in teaching. It comes all of the time because it's such a perfect example for my ability to create a world, live in it, you know, have all types of activities go in it, and from the standpoint of the one in that dream world, that is completely real. It's a reality, it's a world that is existing within time and space. It's this picture display, this chitrikritam, this variegated picture, and as that picture comes into being, time and space come into being itself, that this projection, right, this manifestation is something that is created by Maya. So if I say Maya, what does Maya mean etymologically? Ya, ma, iti Maya. That which is not, that is Maya. means that which has no independent being of its own. We experience it, but it has no being of its own. It is dependent upon something else for its being. In the sense of the case of the dream depends upon me. I lend my consciousness and my being to the dream. So the dream, while it is there, it is known, and to the dream characters within the dream, they become knowers. Right? The whole dream is known, everything in the dream is known. That's consciousness. Consciousness. And all of the living entities within the dream that have minds and sense organs, they become knowers. Right? So they think. And that's going to be negated. But nevertheless, we do think of ourselves as a knower, right? I'm a seer, I'm a hearer, I'm a thinker, I emote, all of these things, I have memories. So I think of myself as a knower, subject-object relationship. The dream characters also think of themselves as knowers. All of the whole dream is known, but then the dream characters become knowers. Even the little animals are knowers. As long as they have a subtle body, as long as they have some sense organs and some mind, they can become knowers. But now this dream comes into being. It's not a creation. It's not like first the space slowly comes and then... No. The whole thing comes like that. It comes into manifestation. The dream manifests. And then at some point, the dream resolves. You wake up from it. So it manifests, resolves. Manifests, resolves, like that. One dream manifests, one dream resolves. Another dream manifests, another dream resolves. Not like the creation or the same creation. It's coming in like that. We can do that. And for the characters in the dream, it's all very real. It has an empirical reality from within. You know, from our standpoint, when we wake up, it doesn't have the reality, the same order of reality that we give to this reality that we're the dream characters in. Here we are in this reality, and we come back into this reality. And when we come back into this reality from the dream, we realize that was only a dream, that dream came from me, was sustained by me and resolved into me, that it has no essential reality of its own. I am its reality. I am its knownness. I am its consciousness. I am its very being. That becomes clear to me from the waking state. I guess, yes, the dream is just my own projection, right? The dream is just my own manifestation. It has no independent being. That's Maya. What can allow for that to happen is what we call Maya. When you have a daydream, that is Maya, right? Because that's a manifestation. It's really interesting. In a daydream, you can also be in the daydream and you have a little world in there, you know, and you're doing something or other, and then you come back from the daydream. That allows that, that's what we call Maya. The material cause of that phenomena is Maya. The imagination of a snake on a rope, that is Maya. How can I see? There's no really snake there, right? But I'm experiencing a snake. All that's there is a rope. I'm experiencing a snake. That which allows for that projection, that is Maya, right? So we have many instances. We also use instances like if on a beach, if I'm looking down the beach, I can see like a piece of silver on the beach. You know, but when I get close to it, it's only a seashell. So that silver, the adhishtana of the silver was the seashell. The appearance of that silver, that is Maya. Because it's something which has a very time-limited reality. When it's there, it seems so real for the ones who are within it. It's all very real. It's really happening. But then you recognize, right, that it has no essential being of its own. It's totally dependent on an adhishtana. So here, this whole creation, we say, is made of Maya. That Maya projects as this creation, you know. And then the way that it projects, we have to get into and take a look at, which is what we're going to do next, but not now. Right, we're done at 1, right? Oh, good, because otherwise we'd have to get, if it was 1:30, then we would have to get into it. But we're going to do it next class. We'll get into it. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Shri Gurupyo Namaha Harihi Om.